As you probably know, the Odyssey is back in the news. Homer's epic classic, somewhere around 3,000 years old. Now in IMAX. I haven't been able to see the movie yet, but as an English major, I did have to study it in school, as probably some of you did too. You probably know some of the highlights of the plot, whether or not you've seen it or read it. There's Odysseus, the king of Ithaca, who's been away fighting the Trojan War for 10 years. The gods themselves intervene to get him back on the road home. As they're heading home, they encounter the fierce Cyclops, Polyphemus. And Odysseus is a trickster, so they get away. They blind Odysseus, they blind Polyphemus, they escape. But as they're running away, Odysseus calls out, "Hey, guess who made you blind? It's Odysseus." Bad idea. Thanks to that prideful error, the father of the Cyclops, Poseidon, god of the sea, makes it so that Odysseus has to spend 9 extra years on the road before he gets home. So finally, after 20 years, he washes up on the shores of Ithaca. It's shrouded in mist. Everything looks unfamiliar. He's changed after 20 years, and he's not sure what he will find when he walks through the front doors. He is almost home, but he is not yet safe. Well, I couldn't help but hear some parallels between Odysseus and Jacob as I studied our passage from Genesis this week. Well, this crazy, dramatic, mysterious passage of scripture we have before us. Jacob was also a clever trickster, like Odysseus. Jacob, too, spent 20 years away from home, in part because of his own trickery and pride. And like Odysseus, Jacob has come back to his homeland after those 20 years, but he is not sure what's going to meet him on the other side. He is almost home, but he's not safe yet. There is, of course, one big difference between the story of Odysseus and the story of Jacob. Odysseus, as is the case with all Greek myths, is full of capricious gods that may or may not be on your side, as well as this unchangeable, impersonal fate that draws you toward an ending you can't escape. But the story of Jacob is ultimately a story of God's unshakable faithfulness to the covenant he made. Not a capricious God, not a fate he can't escape, but God's faithfulness to Abraham, to Isaac, and now to Jacob himself. It's a story of deep grace in the midst of deep conflict, and we see that nowhere more than here in Genesis 32. So before we take a closer look at this passage, the grace, God's faithfulness, the conflict, let's remember some of the events that led up to this strange middle-of-the-night scene. Jacob gets a lot of, it's not screen time, chapters. Gets a lot of chapters in Genesis, almost as many as Abraham. His story begins in Genesis 25. You might remember this. There's Isaac and Rebekah. Rebekah was childless. Isaac prays and God answers. And there are twins. When the babies are born, Esau's born first and Jacob's born right after holding on to his heel. The name Jacob means he grasps the heel. Not an idiom we use in English much, but it's a metaphor for deceitfulness and trickery. He's born as a trickster and lives up to his name. He manages to get Esau to sign away his extra portion of inheritance for a bowl of stew. And later he tricks his father Isaac into giving him Esau's blessing as well. So Esau's had enough. He says he's going to kill Jacob. Jacob flees north, goes to find his mother's family in Mesopotamia. I did a lot of looking at maps this week, right? Mesopotamia is kind of Turkey-ish. As Jacob's on the road, he collides with God's grace. He sleeps, goes to sleep at night. Again, all these things happening at night. And he dreams of the ladder, or really the ziggurat, between heaven and earth. And in the dream, God speaks to Jacob, "I am the Lord, the God of your father Abraham and the God of Isaac. I will give you and your descendants the land on which you're lying. Your descendants will be like the dust of the earth. You'll spread out to the west, to the east, to the north, to the south. All peoples on earth will be blessed through you. I am with you and will watch over you wherever you go, and I will bring you back to this land. I will not leave you until I've done what I've promised you." That's Abraham language all over again. Jacob is the inheritor, the successor of that promise, not due to anything about him, not due to his sterling character, but just grace. Jacob is leaving the promised land, going into exile, but God says, I will bring you back. I will be with you. Genesis 29, Jacob reaches the land of his ancestors. Again, modern-day Turkey, not far from the border with Syria, Haran. He finds his uncle Laban, his family. He falls in love with his cousin Rachel at first sight. Beautiful love story. Not quite. In Laban, Jacob gets exactly what he deserves. You probably remember this story as well. Laban is just as big of a trickster as Jacob. Jacob works 7 years to marry Rachel. Laban slips in Leah to the tent instead. So, Jacob works 7 more years to earn Rachel. Lots of conflict in the family. Lots of grief over childbearing. Eventually, 2 concubine wives as well. Even so, even with all that trickery and mess and deceit, we see God involved in Jacob's family life, caring for Leah in particular. God's grace interwoven even in the middle of all that trickery and conflict. So, 14 years after leaving the promised land, Jacob wants to go home. He's ready to accumulate some things for his own household, not just Laban's. Laban manages to keep Jacob around 6 more years while they each try to outmaneuver the other. You remember this crazy detail about Jacob putting the striped bark in front of the lambs and goats to try to get them to produce stripes and spots? I don't think you need to try this at home, folks. The point of the story is not, hey, that striped bark thing works, but that God takes care of Jacob. God takes care of Jacob, blesses his flocks, keeps him safe from Laban, who keeps trying to change the terms of it all. Finally, after 20 years, God tells Jacob, go back home, and I will be with you. It's time. God promised to bring him back and stay with him. That promise hasn't changed even after 20 years. And Jacob obeys in Jacob fashion. He slips out in the middle of the night. Laban comes after him, could have destroyed him, but God intervenes. He warns Laban in a dream not to mess with Jacob. So once again, God keeps Jacob safe. Laban heads back north. And finally, after 20 years away, Jacob reaches the edge of the promised land. He is almost home, but he's not safe yet. Because now there is Esau. At the beginning of chapter 32, before our passage for today, Jacob starts by sending a message to Esau. In a modern day translation, it might say something like, hey, it's been a long time. We're good, right? The New Message translation. The messengers come back with no response from Esau except to tell Jacob, yeah, Esau is now on his way to meet you with 400 men. That is an army, my friends. This is not good. Jacob is long on sheep and wives and low on fighters. So first, as one must, Jacob panics. He says, okay, we're going to divide the company into 2 camps. At least if one is attacked, the other will get away. Okay. Then he prays. That's usually how it goes, right? Panic, then pray. But he prays this. O God of my father Abraham, God of my father Isaac, Lord, you who said to me, go back to your country and I'll make you prosper. I am unworthy of all the kindness and faithfulness you've shown your servant. I had only my staff when I crossed this Jordan, but now I've become 2 camps. Save me, I pray, from the hand of my brother Esau. For I'm afraid he'll come and attack me and also the mothers with their children. But you have said, I will surely make you prosper and will make your descendants like the sand of the sea, which cannot be counted. Somehow, in the midst of all that, Jacob remembers God's promise and God's grace. And he reminds God what God has promised. God did not just promise, I'll bring you back to the land and the rest is up to you. He said, I will bless you. And so Jacob says, okay, well, do it. Save me. Be true to your word. He prays, and then, of course, he still schemes. He sends a series of gifts out to Esau. You remember this? It's like, okay, I'm going to send the goats first, and now I'm going to send some sheep. He sends them in waves, which is actually pretty shrewd. because it'll slow down Esau to have to receive all those animals, and the camp gets noisier the more goats you add. It shows Esau, Jacob is not here to get something from him. He's actually really trying to give him things. It also puts Jacob's servants leading the flocks into the camp of Esau, which would come in handy if there ends up being a fight, having some insiders. So Jacob is still scheming, but there's a lot that's out of his hands. There are still 400 men heading his way with Esau. And that's where our text begins for today. That night, not knowing what the next day will bring, the last midnight, you might say, Jacob starts, he sends